All right, today we were joined by Mike and Indy, legendary Jim Rome show caller, just a hilarious dude all around. He's a little sample of Mikey.
I smacked Vic so hard a couple weeks back, he got put in the concussion protocol. Then I protocoled left the week after that. And you better get the smelling salts out again, Romy, because I'm not finished. The doctors on the Smack-Off CTE committee identified three guys who were deemed to be most at risk because I've protocoled them so many times. The first case identified was Vic. The committee observed that Vic tended to be irregular in all the places you don't want to be irregular. The check cashing store, the neighborhood whorehouse, fifth place in the Smack-Off. So they ordered a scan of Vic's brain, and in his brain scan, they saw an image of me waving at the camera. I've been in Vic's head so long, the state of California tried to charge me property taxes.
This is why this guy's what? Not only one of the greatest callers, maybe the best caller in this show's history, maybe? Definitely one of the best callers in radio history. Mike and Andy, in any genre, any format, any show.
One of the best callers in radio, any genre, any format. From the words of Jim Rome himself. Thanks, Rome, for the snippet today. And thanks, Mike, for coming on, man. It was a good conversation. Without further ado, let's get on to it. The Mike and Indy. All right, man, so you ready to rock and roll?
Yeah, man, let's do it.
Cool. So, we're joined now by, obviously, a smack-talking man of the ages, a champion Hall of Famer, Mike and Indy. So, Mike, one thing I've always personally been curious about was how you and Chael went from rivals to partners in crime, like, over that span of time. And just wondering if you could let me inside on kind of how that all transpired after you guys were kind of going at each other. You kind of got the better of him in a one-on-one smack-off. And then all of a sudden you guys emerged as like almost a tag team. How did that come to be?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, anytime you got two elite guys going at each other, there's gonna end up being a certain amount of respect, you know, when one's carrying his own and elevating the gameplay of his opponent. Both sides respect that, and we both respected the show that we put on together. Going at each other, so we were confident in our abilities that if we teamed up, that we could dominate and put on a hell of a show. Plus, catch a lot of people off guard just by the simple fact that, you know, rivals turning and teaming up, you know, it's the last thing you'd expect. So everything was just a perfect scenario for shocking the world, and that's exactly what we did.
Hell yeah, man, that was awesome. And like, when you guys initially got in touch with one another, was there kind of a quiet reach out on somebody's behalf?
A quiet reach out? I'm not sure exactly what that means.
You know, like when, because you guys obviously would have only gone toe-to-toe throughout being on the actual show. Like, was there like a DM on Twitter where you're kind of like, hey man, like, I had this idea, or did he come to you?
Yeah, he came to me, and he emailed me, which I've got my email, my profile.
Okay.
I get emails from all kinds of people all the time, and, you know, emails are always off the record, so you'd be shocked some of the people I get emails from, and he's just one of them, and it ended up clicking soon thereafter. After he got a hold of me, we talked on the phone, and pretty early on, we both realized that, you know, we had some fire, and that, you know, all we had to do was take care of business, and we'd be good, and we were.
Oh, absolutely, man. It was I was just strictly a listener and an emailer back when that stuff went down, and it was that was probably my favorite smack off of all time. So oh yeah, absolutely, man. So I just got a couple topics here I thought we could kind of run down over, get your take on. So me and my buddies were at the bar the other night talking about the worst fucking take of 2017. Where and when it came from. You know, a bunch of them had political takes. We'll gloss over that generally. But who do you think and what was the worst take of 2017?
Yeah, there's been a lot of bad political takes on both sides, no doubt about it. this isn't necessarily a take specific to 2017, but it's kind of relevant, and we've been hearing it a lot lately just because Tiger finally did show up in this tournament and show up strong. And I think one of the worst takes is everybody who said Tiger's done, he's finished, he's this and that. I've always been Team Tiger, and, you know, I may not like a lot of what he's done, but he definitely creates a lot of show fodder and a lot of conversation.
Yeah.
And respect what he did while he was on top. But, I mean, you take the best to ever do it, and we're talking about the game of golf, and I respect the game of golf, and I've played it enough to know that, you know, it's a humbling game, and it's not an easy game. But nonetheless, you don't have to be Michael Jordan to be elite at golf. You know, there's other traits that you need to be strong in, you know, as far as focus and consistency, especially. But for the people who thought Tiger at, you know, 40 whatever he is, would have no shot at ever winning another major or winning any other kind of tournament ever again, you know, I mean, again, we're not talking about the most elite athletes in the world. And, you know, obviously the big thing holding him up was his body, you know, which, you know, from however he developed his body, whatever he was doing, obviously took a toll eventually, and health-wise wasn't in good shape. You know, you could argue a lot of it was the mental side, which, you know, can be a big factor in golf especially. But physically, there's no denying that he had huge major injuries. But, you know, again, he only needs to be at about 80% physically, you know, 80% mentally, to be able to do ridiculous stuff, you know, on the course. And so it was just a matter to me of whether Tiger wants to pursue it, because the way I look at it, he's got at least 10 years worth of majors and other tournaments, you know, to come back and do something. And whether he gets a major or not, I don't know, but everyone throwing dirt on top of Tiger, I was just like, man, this dude could turn around and win, especially with the advances in science, you know, medical advances and all that, regenerative research that they're doing. You know, this guy's got all the money in the world to get all the best treatments, you know, back issues, nothing to scoff at, but, you know, if anyone could get to about 80% and let his talent take over, he'd be the dude. So I've been, you know, even though his recent little comeback wasn't, you know, perfect all everything, I mean, it was enough for people to...
It was a nice little preseason game, right? It was a nice little kind of, you know, it wasn't a regular season game, but he had a nice little preseason game. I think there's a good chance he's got, I mean, like you said, 41. He's probably got a quarter of the tank left at least. I think he's got more than one major possibly left in that old tank too.
I mean, you see Freddie Couples coming close to, you know, snagging one here and there at whatever age he's at. So, yeah, Tiger's got at least 10 more years. Plus, Tiger was, you know, way better than Freddie Couples ever was. So if Freddie Couples could be in the mix, you know, on a Sunday, then Tiger could, as long as he gets right, gets healthy. And the big thing is him wanting to do it. Now, if he's content just playing video games all day and doing whatever, various drugs, you know, more power to him if that's what he wants to do. But if he wants to be a great golfer and focuses on his health, you know, he doesn't have to be a stud 25-year-old to, you know, dominate the field. So, you know, I think, you know, and we heard a lot of that, you know, before Tiger came into this last little tournament. So I think that was one of the worst takes. And that's saying something for as many bad takes as 2017 has had. And yes, most of the bad takes have been political on both sides.
100%.
But for a sports take, at least, I'd say the Tiger Woods being done take is ridiculous. Now, he may not win one, or he may not pursue it, but if he wants to pursue it, he can. There's no doubt in my mind.
And everybody who's ever enjoyed a round of golf and gets into it in any way is I think they're either a Tiger honk or they're a Tiger hater, but either way, they're paying attention. So, like, they're all, like, even like, kind of pundits and whatnot, talking heads, they all seem to be either pro or hate Tiger. And then they'll all just kind of spin their narrative to, like, what they want him to either fail or succeed, like, and then attack the other side for saying, oh, you say he can't win. And the other side's all saying, you guys just never going to give up on this guy. And it's like, he's only 41 years old.
No, it's very polarizing and easy to come up with a strong take on both sides. But then you got to put your money where your mouth is at some point. And then obviously the PGA is super pumped. I mean, they were tweeting their asses off, you know, with every little thing he did, sending stuff out. I mean, he would be huge for the game of golf if he can come out and be competitive. And I think he can. So I'm hoping he doesn't have any setbacks, and I'm hoping for his kid's sake he can pull his life together, you know, his life most importantly, but if he can pull golf together with it, and maybe it's a symbiotic relationship where, you know, if one's going well, he can manage the other a little bit better, and so hopefully he can get that going, and, you know, obviously, you know, for the kid's sake, it'd be good, and for a lot of people, it'd be good to see a comeback story, and you know, see him get right, you know.
For sure.
So we'll see.
I'm one of those guys, too, who even his shortcomings or whatever, you know, the issues, we would all reference his pre-downfall problems. I actually kind of like that he was, like, hitting Vegas with MJ and Barkley and, you know, like, getting after it, like, with Jeter. And I like that he was kind of inserting himself into that life and kind of knowing that he was that much above his peers that he could hang with those kind of players. You know, I always, and I don't know, kind of the sex addiction and the unapologetic kind of me-first attitude that would develop in your 20s, like for almost anybody with that level of success. So he just kind of surrounded himself with the same like-minded people, and it just became a self-fulfilling prophecy, like it does for almost everybody except Jeter.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, and I can speak from experience. I mean, when I rose to the top rank in the jungle, I mean, that stuff can tend to get to your head. You know, you got celebrities coming at you from every angle.
Sure.
You know, girls throwing themselves at you.
Absolutely.
You know, it's easy for people to judge outside of our shoes, but you know, if you think about it, yeah, that's a lot of pressure and a lot of you know, new opportunities coming up to somebody that, you know, if you haven't been handling that your whole life, it can be overwhelming. I've done a pretty good job managing it, but you know, not all of us are as good as I am at handling that. Well, fame and that attention and that power that comes with being elite.
100%. It's all about getting the reps on the red carpet, man. And most of the people who listen to guys with a superior rap to them will never taste a red carpet. So they are what we generally obviously will reference as only player haters. But another thing I wanted to bring up, man, is I was just watching some games today. And people with paint on their face in the stands, to me that's the second biggest loser move to people who bring like a sign in the sands and then they're like referencing some story about their personal life on the sign, like we drove so and so miles to get here, or like I saw one today that the wife had one and she was a Canuck fan and the other guy was a Maple Leaf fan, she's like, I said yes before I knew he was a Leaf fan, and they're like, now they're making the newspaper and whatnot. I'm like, you gotta fuck these losers, don't give them what they want, get the camera off them.
Yeah, those are cheap ploys for 15 seconds of fame. Yeah, both groups there, huge losers. I know when I was younger, you know, like in high school, you know, I'd look at like a lot of the college football or basketball games, and you see someone with their face painted, and you're like, oh man, that dude's so wild, you know, and then you get to college, and it's like, this is the biggest loser in our school right here, you know, so I mean, yeah, it's all about perspective, but yeah, those guys, like the Cameron crazies, those guys are all huge losers. Yeah, no, good point on both of those. Not a big fan. I've never done it, don't think I ever will. I'll never say never, but man, I'd have to be either super wasted or have a real good reason to have a sign. Or, you know, I'm talking like blackout drunk,
for sure.
Drew on me, maybe.
How about like the just the misdemeanor offense?
Involved. It would be a no consent involved situation, basically.
What are your take on Jersey guy in general, the guy who's got like 18 of any given team's jerseys, and he just swaps them in and out. He's got like $3,000 invested in his team's jerseys. What's your take on that guy?
Man, that's $3,000 he probably should have spent on a gym membership, most likely. Those guys tend to be extremely unathletic. That's the ironic thing. And they're wearing the jerseys. You know, they never played, you know, a sport in middle school, high school. You know, can't throw a football. You know, these guys are out here running around like they're second stringers, you know. I do own a couple of jerseys. One was bought for me for a Colts game, and so I will admit, we went, it was like three of us. I got a Dwight Freeney jersey, actually, I don't think we even went to the game. We just got drunk at a bar and watched the game, but for whatever reason. And so drinking.
Yeah, I've got a couple in my closet
too. I
didn't
pay for it, so I'll say I did not show up to the stadium. But
I've got a couple Christmas presents in the closet myself. That's about it, though.
Yeah. So I'm not going to deny ownership or having worn one, but man, I think that's the only time I actually wore it. Owning a jersey and maybe having it pinned up on a wall or something, if it's a cool jersey, you know, not a bad deal, but you're out there sporting it. You know, corollary to that, one thing that annoys me is when you get a big fat guy that wears like one of those Colts or whatever team, not jersey, but like their practice gear. So like, you know, this guy's like, you know, maybe 5'11", about 280, looking like maybe could have been a lineman at one point, but it's one of those authentic, you know, practice gear things where it's like, hey, maybe that guy's a player. Nah, those fat asses, not respect of athleticism.
Or when those fat guys get like gears.
But they try to look, they try to blend in and make people think just with them being particularly rotund and maybe like 5'11"-ish, you know, that maybe this guy actually plays for the Colts. Now, Colts players aren't rolling around in Colts gear anyway.
No way, man. They got like a Hugo Boss sweater on, no doubt.
Yeah.
I like the, my favorite's like the guy who's like in his 50s. He's probably like, he's well over 250, and he's wearing like the 20-year-old defensive back jersey. And he's just, he's wearing that with pride. Like, this guy's making $30,000 a year, and he's wearing this 20-year-old guy's jersey who makes $5 million a season. It's just, it's always struck me as an odd homage to people.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%.
All right, man. Well, we, as you know, we reached out to some fans to offer up some advice from a couple people who think they know what they're talking about. So we'll launch in one. We got one from Brian in Calgary. This turned up on my Facebook page, actually, on the show's Facebook page. It says, "What's up, boys? What is your take on going heavy with Christmas lights in the yard? Part of me loves it. Part of me wants nothing to do with it. What do I do, Brian in Calgary?" Any thoughts on that, Mike?
Yeah, I got a few thoughts on that. I think you either have to go hard or very simple. You know, just have a little bit out there. I would say go hard or nothing at all, but I'm okay with a little bit of, you know, lights on the bushes along the walkway up to the door or something like that. But it's got to make sense. And, you know, there's obviously, you know, a few moves that you know, that I consider to be ridiculous, and I've been looking out for it. I don't know if they've changed to like a certain kind of an LED light to where some of the blue lights kind of look purple, or I don't know if people are actually using Halloween decorative lights, because that's where you usually get that purple light thrown in on the string. That's not a Christmas color.
No,
that's not a standard official Christmas color from back in the day when Christmas lights were Christmas lights. So I don't know if it's like an LED thing or if people are trying to, you know, buy some cheap-ass Halloween discounted lights when Halloween's done and try to pass them off as some Christmas lights. But that purple thrown in there is a spooky look. You're bringing some bad karma on yourself when you throw that purple color in there on string. So not a fan of that look. Also not a fan of people who mismatch all the different kinds of Christmas lights. Like, you got the white ones, then you got the multicolor, then you got the big bulb Christmas lights.
The ones they had since the 80s, and then they got.
So, like, I think there's a certain sophistication to the small colored lights. I like those as well. Not a huge fan of the white lights, but if you do it right and you do it all white, it's kind of cool. But, like, you can't have going across your gutter, across the front of your house, white light and then big colored lights and then little light, or like even on a bush, you can't do like half the bush.
You mean like those, like those white lights, like icicle kind of lights, those ones that like dangle down,
you know, mixing it, like it's all got to make sense.
Yeah,
you know, you got
uniformity,
put everything. The other thing I just thought of this the other thing two things, actually, now that I think about it. One thing is people who will decorate an evergreen tree, pine tree or whatever, about halfway up to where they can actually reach, and they don't actually go to the top of the motherfucker.
Or they just try and like throw it up like two branches higher than they can reach. Like,
yeah, they do what they can, but they're losing a lot of coverage, and yeah. It just looks ridiculous. Like, it doesn't even look like a full pine tree. I mean,
the definition of half-assed.
When you're driving up on that house, you think, oh, there's a their tree only goes to this point. No, close up, actually, they've got a lot more tree than that. These assholes just couldn't be bothered to fully cover the tree. So my thing, so if you can't go to the top, stop. Don't decorate at all. If you can't go to the top, stop. So that's a big pet peeve. Do not go halfway up. That's, again, what kind of message are you sending people? You go halfway up the tree. That's what I'm talking about. You can do simple little things, or you got to go all out. You can't be half dressing a pine tree. I don't care if it's 60 feet tall, then just don't dress the pine tree. Do something else.
Yeah, I agree.
But if you can't be bothered to drape these things properly, then just don't do it. I mean, you're sending a losing message.
Yeah.
To your kids, your relatives, your neighbors. Your neighbors are pissed. You make them look like ass clowns.
You're setting a culture of mediocrity. That's what you're doing, right? You're setting a neighborhood culture of mediocrity.
Yeah, you lose friends quick. I mean, I drop you in an instant. You start half-dressing that pine tree real quick. But the thing that probably pisses me off the most, and I saw someone do this the other day. It's actually fairly common, and it shouldn't be. But people who will dress a maple tree. I don't care what kind of lights. Usually it's like the regular, smaller colored lights. And they're whipping those lights up over the top of this 50-foot maple tree or whatever. And it just looks like shit when it lights up, because there's no rhyme or reason. They're just thrown all over. You can't really circle a big maple tree like that.
Right.
And it just, a maple tree is not a Christmas species. People try to force the issue. I mean, maybe they don't have an evergreen tree, or evergreen bushes to do so.
Well, you can imagine that people can't get enough of the fucking maple leaf trees up here, man. Fuck, all day with the maple leaf trees up here, all day long.
I can imagine. Well, they're fond of them down around these parts too.
And, yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, I feel like to some extent you're inviting a Christmas curse on yourself and your family. When you start draping a maple, don't drape the maple.
That's right. Avoid the maple.
It's not to be draped.
Just let the maple just sit Christmas out. The maple likes Halloween decorations in it. That's fine. But just
the maple trees invited, but we're not going to celebrate the maple tree. That's different genres, and not trying to exclude the maple tree, but
it's like country music has their own awards, right? The maple tree wants its own situation. It's like the Country Music Awards. The other music awards, they just ignore it. And then the country, they just have their own other separate awards.
Yeah, I mean, maple trees, they're on, what's that Canadian beer that they're on?
They're pretty much on all of them in here.
I'm sure there's evergreens sitting out being like, damn, what can I get on a beer label, But hey, man, different species got different things going on.
For
and
sure.
I don't know, man. I got a buddy who, he drapes the maple. I have a former friend. I don't know if he still does. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. I wouldn't know.
Cut contact, obviously.
Dead in his place.
Yeah.
What kind of look is that for me showing up to a Christmas party? He's out here drinking the maple.
Yeah, exactly. Then the next thing social media firestorm you got to deal with after that.
Paparazzi catches you.
That's unbelievable.
In front of this draped up maple.
My only advice to add on for Brian, and this kind of touches on what you touched on earlier, was that I was working the other day and I saw a guy who's got a nice big 3-story house, and he just did the garage doors with lights, and it was like, man, just don't do anything then, just call it call it off.
Like I said, if you can light up a pathway, or if you got some bushes right up against the house, that's a way you can go simple. not do like two windows on one side and then that's all you got, or like one window upstairs and one downstairs and that's all. I mean, there's got to be some rhyme or reason to it. It's got to make sense. You got to make it make sense.
Yeah.
You know, too many people out here, they just want to throw all these lights all over the place willy-nilly. And, man, it's not going to take me out of the Christmas spirit quicker than someone jacking up some Christmas lights, man. I got, you know, I don't got time for that.
That's right, man. We'll switch gears to this email that I received with also when we put the question for it. This one's a little more heavy. It says, boys, I was going through my girlfriend's phone. I know it's a douchebag move, but I saw some questionable and flirty texts with her ex-boyfriend. Should I confront her because I was checking her texts and haven't admitted that? P.S. We've been living together for 2 months. They were together for over 5 years. What do I do? CJ didn't give a location. Any thoughts on what to do? I mean, you shouldn't be checking the phone, but if you found some shit on the phone, I mean, that kind of negates that you didn't need a warrant then, you know? You kind of went in on like a warrantless search with probable cause. You found what you were looking for. So I think you gotta confront.
I think you're on the right trail with warrantless search there. I think that's a respect thing where, you know, if you don't want someone digging through your phone, probably don't dig through theirs. Now, I mean, I don't know the exact circumstances in which he was, you know, able to check this phone, but nonetheless, I think that kind of shows some insecurities on his part, which that's a bigger problem than the text or whatever. Anyways, so I don't know, that whole situation kind of sounds doomed to me. Anyways,
that's where I'm gonna go ahead and my ruling on it is you cut bait right here. You're 2 months in. You got no common law commitments at this point. You got no financial commitments at this point, that not that we know of anyway. You just clean break, you get out of there.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. Yeah, you can't invest too much into that if you got a shaky foundation, and if he's shaky himself from a security standpoint, can't build a house on that shaky foundation. I agree.
All right, and we got one more. This one came on Twitter, and it just said, I don't know if it's serious or not, but we're not going to treat it as such. It says, hey, when I go away for work, often I miss my girlfriend. How can I handle this? Ronnie in Washington State. But the Twitter handle was not Ronnie in Washington State, so it's suspicious. Any thoughts on when you're missing the lady outside of work? Or when you're away for a business meeting and you're missing the dime?
Okay, wait, read it again real quick. Let me think about it. Go, read it again.
Sure. Hey, what should I do when I travel for work and I really miss my girlfriend? Thanks, Ronnie in Washington State.
Don't admit to her that you miss her, first of all.
Don't even admit to anybody. Like, the fact that he even put this in writing to us is all right. He's already treading on thin ice.
Yeah, delete your account. You know, yeah, you want to scrub that from the internet history as much as possible. That's an embarrassing situation. That's an embarrassing thing to admit in public to anyone, or in private, for that matter.
I mean, unless this guy's like a serviceman and he's gone for like 3 years, I don't even want to hear about it. You know what I mean? Like, if he's on like some 3-week trip to like Dakota, you don't miss your woman at that point. You should enjoy a break. Use it as some mental health free time.
Well, I'll say this. It's okay to miss her, but it's not okay for her to know that you miss her. You lose leverage if she finds out that you're missing her like that, and you look kind of like a beta male.
I would take it one step further and say that it's not okay for anybody to know that you miss her.
Yeah, probably. I mean, maybe your bestest friend who you could trust to never reveal that dirty, dark secret ever.
But maybe you better trust this guy because he might use it to cuck you. This guy could start trying to cuckold scenario. That's how you don't trust this guy with your life. He's got to be like your ride or die homie. You can't just give this to some like coworker that you've known 3 years that's now your friend. You'll use that information against you.
And probably crying while he's admitting it to him. You know, this is an embarrassment of a man. I don't even know what kind of, you know, relationships, you know, whether it's a work relationship or a friendship, even to some extent, but definitely, you know, a regular boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever type relationship. It's all about leverage, you know. I mean, if you're a really good worker and you're a good dude, you've got leverage at your job and you've got some job security. You know, if you're a really good friend and you do favors for your friend and he does favors for you and he has your back and he'll help you out when you need it, you help him out, you know, you're on equal footage. That's a strong relationship. But if one friend is doing all the favors, you know, you lose leverage. That could start to be a little bit of, you know, when you have an unequal relationship like that where one side's doing all the favors, you know, that's where you can get some discontent and some selfishness, either selfishness or weakness is one of the two. But in a boyfriend, girlfriend, or marriage type relationship, that's going to be viewed as a weakness very quickly. And you're admitting that kind of weakness. Now you can, like, if the girl's missing you, like, she can do that. That's fine, because that's strengthening your position. She can miss you all she wants, and that's cool. And that's not a problem, but you should either want complete equality or you want to have the leverage. You know, if it comes down to it, you do not want to be giving her all the leverage. And if you're blubbering over the phone that you miss her and all this and that, you know, go work out, find something to do. And you can talk and keep up and, you know, whatever. And, you know, but man, you just don't put that out there for anybody's sake. Nobody wants to hear that, and you shouldn't be admitting that to anybody.
I think there's a certain element to the to just being the old school caveman mentality too, where, like, if she sees that in you, it just kind of raises a couple questions in her brain. You know, like, what kind of man am I with right now? You know.
Big time red flag. Yeah, man. The girl doesn't want to hear that. She may think she wants to hear it. Like, you know,
yeah,
on its face.
Superficially, she likes to hear that, yeah.
Subconsciously, all that. Nah, she doesn't want to hear that, because then she starts thinking, man, I could do better than this dude. First of all, he's a big wuss, you know. Like, yeah, sensitive guy, this and that. I mean, there's a time and place for being a little sensitive here and there. And if you're not overly sensitive all the time, when you're just a little bit sensitive, it actually seems like a bigger deal. But if you're just a blubbering, crying, you know, sensitive idiot the whole time, you know,
it's basically become a bitch.
Yeah, you know. I mean, you're taking it too far. Yeah, the girl's gonna think I can do better. I apparently could do much better than this guy because, you know, he's, you know, I mean, it's a leverage thing. You know, subconsciously, females don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that. You know, you could tell him, maybe. I maybe go as far as to say, maybe under circumstance, you could say, I miss you a little bit, not too much, but a little bit. I think maybe you could do that. And kind of play, you know, kind of, you know, I miss you a little bit. Not too much, though. Not too much, you know. I mean, maybe get away with that, but, man, I play it safe and just not admit it at all, unless you absolutely have to. Last card to be played.
The way I like to play that scenario off is if you get that text message, she's like, oh, I miss you so much. Be like, oh, don't worry, I'll be home in, like, 4 days.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And then she's just kind of like, oh, yeah, I'll see you, I guess, in 4 days. And it's like, yes, you will. And then they kind of think that you're, like, you know, you're almost tricking them. It's a Jedi mind trick.
Oh, yeah. That's the exact way to play it. That's the exact way to play it.
It's one of the few things in life I consider myself an expert at. It's
there's a mental warfare. Again, whether it's a work situation or whatever, I mean, you got cards to play, you play them, you know, everyone's trying to win the game. Now, both people can win. It doesn't have to necessarily be a winner and a loser.
That's the dream scenario. That's the dream scenario.
There's still a game to be played, though, and you got to play it. If you're not good at playing it, good luck.
100%, man. So last little bit to go here. We're out nicely. We're already well over 30 minutes, which is doesn't feel like that. But I'm just going to give you some trigger words, and you just kind of give me whatever comes to your mind with them. They're mostly going to be jungle related. This is a an homage to where we know each other from.
Okay, cool.
So first is a person, Ryan Gregson.
Rob Gregson?
Ryan Gregson, former GM of the Colts.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I couldn't hear you there for a second.
Oh, sorry, man.
The Colts have been, I thought it was going to be like a jungle specific.
Oh, yeah, no, that's kind of, yeah.
Character in the jungle, because there's a lot of new guys in the jungle that, I kind of recognize the name, but don't really know him or haven't paid much attention. Seems like there's been kind of a lot of new guys recently.
Oh yeah, no, there's only one clone that I'm gonna specifically mention by name just to trigger you and see what you say.
Gotcha. The cults have been in a bad spot for quite a while now, and actually, it goes back to the Peyton Manning days in the middle of his peak, really, even when we were doing really well. Jim Caldwell was a terrible coach, for example, but we started missing on a lot of free agents. We brought a lot of guys in who Peyton Manning could make look really good,
right.
and that helps. But man, when your O-line is just completely trash, you're making a lot tougher. We should have won more championships than what we did with Peyton Manning. But even more recently, with Andrew Luck, just, a lot of O-line men that can't really block. We got blockers that can't block. I mean, what are you out there for,
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're bringing someone else to the table, you're blocking, you better be able to block. And our guys really haven't been able to.
Is Luck going to be all right?
Luck's taking all these hits and everything. And, obviously he's a stud if we can keep him standing up. But, you look at our last however many draft classes, a lot of terrible draft picks. I mean, we haven't had anybody, we've missed way more than we've hit, and our hit ratio, it's got to be worse than the Browns, honestly, and that's tough when you gotta rely on the draft, and everyone really has to some extent. You can't have all veteran studs everywhere that cost too much money. You got to be able to draft some starters who you can get a good deal on in their rookie contracts, so you can pay some bigger money to some of the bigger studs you bring in. Man, we've been missing on everybody. So
is Pagano going down?
Stud position. So we need So aside from the administrative side of things, the other thing that is frustrating because, I don't know. He's a good guy, and he battled cancer, and I got love for him. But Chuck Pagano is not a good coach, and it really shouldn't have taken this long. I think the fact that he beat cancer was a little bit of a factor in it, and I'm sure the players love him. Again, good guy and all that. But he makes very simple mistakes as a coach,
right.
And you can't have a coach in there that's going to cost you 3 or 4 games a year. One game a year, you could argue you shouldn't even be costing one game a year, but you're costing 2, 3, 4, at some point when he was going through treatment and Bruce Arians was taken over, the team had a good amount of success there for a little while. And then, Pagano, and it was kind of tough to tell, it was Pagano's team, Arians was coaching, how much was who, and then, Arians went to Arizona and had a good amount of success there for the roster that he has, and for the whole decrepit dudes he's marching out there every day.
Right.
And injury struggles that they've had. I think he proved to be a great coach once he got out there, and Pagano proved to be not a great coach, and so I feel bad for the guy. I hope he bounces back, but he needs to be out.
Tend to agree. Time for a house cleaning there. Build around Luck with a new staff.
Yeah, start over. But you gotta draft right to be successful. And yeah, I mean, you look at the Patriots. They're bringing in undrafted free agents who are contributing strong and good through the draft as well. When you can draft well and also be good at bringing in free agents that fit your system and all that, man. And part of that is coaching, but part of that is administrative front office. So, yeah, Colts got a lot of cleaning up to do.
Right on. All right, number two was Kyle Brandt.
Kyle Brandt, love the guy. I will say that the jungle has still been strong in his absence, and it probably would have been a little stronger with him, but I think that just speaks to the strength of the new guys that Jim's brought in and their talent. And I think it kind of took about 2 or maybe 3 guys to make up for Kyle Brandt's departure, so I think that's paying respect to him, because he was a stud on the show. And so, even though the show has continued its success, think it did take about three guys. But also, you know, when you're bringing three new guys in, it takes them a while to get up to speed, you know. And so there's that aspect as well. But
they got to get comfortable, too, and kind of learn what's not going to get them in too much trouble.
Yeah. There's a learning curve there, but there seems to be a lot of talent in the new guys, and I think they've done a really good job. But Kyle Brandt is a stud. You know, he rubs some people the wrong way, but I love his sense of humor, and I knew he'd be really good at whatever he did, whether he got his own show, radio, TV, whatever all else. I think he's been killing it with his Good Morning Football show.
He's a talented guy, man.
More time to check it out, but yeah, he's killing it on there. And the cool thing is, I mean, it's a lot of the same type of humor that we used to get. Obviously, they aren't as ridiculous as what, you know, you could be in the jungle, so he has to kind of modify the medium he's using for the humor.
Sure.
And what flies and what doesn't. But he's transitioned into that very well, keeping it, you know, more or less PG, and you know, having great rants and ridiculousness and all that. He's awesome. He's brilliant. I respect the hell out of him.
I agree, man. I think he's still got higher to climb too. All right, number three, probably the opposite end of the spectrum. One Vic in NoCal.
Yep. We went from the top of the heap to the bottom of the barrel.
I agree.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I mean, I feel bad ragging on Vic. And that's kind of the most insulting thing that you could say to somebody is I even feel bad piling on this dude. Because he is such a scrub. And he tries hard. Bless his heart. That's always the most commissary thing. You say, bless his heart. He's just simple brain, you know? He's a simple man with a small brain. Bless his heart, you know? He cracks me up sometimes. I respect him, but, you know, kind of don't. I mean, I don't respect him on an elite level, but, you know, I'm glad he's in there. He's easy fodder, you know, because he's such a tool. There's things I see eye to eye on him, and he and I will be aligned in an interest at one point or another here and there. So, you know, I think he's a good dude, but, you know, competition-wise, you know, it's the first thing that comes to my mind is, you know, he can't hang. It's not even close. But I appreciate him trying, and he makes me look good when he goes out there and does something foolish. It helps me shine a little bit brighter, so, you know, I respect that. Thanks, Vic.
He's the one guy that I crave beating in 2018. He's just the one guy. I want him under me so badly in more senses than one. All right.
Yeah, he's a good guy. You know, it's kind of like you'll see this in UFC, you know, or boxing once in a while. It's like he's kind of a name guy, kind of, you know, carried some weight.
He won one, like, what, like, was it 15 years ago he won one, something like that?
Yeah, long ago. They were still doing the text contest and faxes back then.
Yeah, Ugly Bob was still firing things in back then.
Yeah. No, it's embarrassing if you think about how long ago it was that he won. But, yeah, no, but he's a name guy that, like, you know, he's over the hill. You know, never be as great as he was, which he was never that great, you know, even at his peak. But, you know, kind of a name. So a good guy for someone to climb on and clown, and easy competition, easy fight at this point, you know, to get over on him. That's his main role in the jungle at this point, is a lot of young guys, you know, getting their feet wet, you know, with kind of a named over the hill guy, you know, with not much talent left in the tank. So it's a good role for him.
Yeah, man. And the last thing is, it's kind of a two-parter. First was Smack Off 2017, and then just a follow-up will be, what are your thoughts on what 2018 is going to bring for us?
2017, man, I could talk an hour on that one. It's a frustrating situation. I wouldn't call myself a sore loser, but I do take it tough. I don't care what it is I'm competing in. Whether it's a game of poker, Monopoly, basketball, running a race, so telling someone I'm faster than them, they say they're faster, throw the shoes on and run it out. I don't care what it is, anywhere, any setting, any time, money at stake, no money at stake, somebody watching, nobody watching, millions of people watching, I hate to lose. I don't care what it is. And I don't go easy on family members either. Whatever board game, you know, actual basketball game, I don't go easy on anybody. I feel like that's disrespectful. So I'm always bringing everything I got. And when you're bringing everything you got, and you know you ran a winning race, but you know it's a subjective thing, and it turns out you didn't win, that always sucks every year. I always take it tough. It's tough to brush off. And like Chael said many times, it's going to take another year before you have a chance to wipe that taste out of your mouth. So it's frustrating. Last year was particularly frustrating due to the specific circumstances of Lev coming in the studio, all that kind of stuff. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of the in-person theatrics and the fairness imbalance. You know, the fact that that opportunity wasn't available. It may have been available to me, but not a lot of the other people participating. So, just a frustrating situation there, all in all. But, that's about...
It was interesting having to go after that call, knowing that the competition was effectively probably already over.
Yeah, man, that's tough. That's, you know, that'll mess with your mind there. You know, you gotta stay focused in light of that and the frustrations that go along. It's like a ref blowing a call in a football game, basketball game, blowing a huge call. Or anticipating, knowing that the refs are about to blow a huge call, and you kind of see it coming, and it's like, man, yeah, tough one to battle through there. But push through. I will say there's a lot of other strong calls that day as well. And, Lev's talented. He's got a big conglomerate of jungle people that help him out on his calls. You know, I'd guess it's somewhere between 50 and 100 people. That's the, but hey, man, you better bring 200, you know, if you want to top me. I mean, if it was a level playing field, it wouldn't be fair. So
I thought a lot of people stepped up this year. You know, I thought it was a hell of a show this year. I've listened to, I think that was 15 for me. So, I mean,
okay,
going from being a listener to being in it, like, I mean, obviously the change is the entire perspective of the process, but I still just, like, I thought, like, Benny brought it hard. I thought, you know.
Yeah, man, that's funny. It's interesting that, you know, you've been a listener for the show and now a participant, which you crushed it. You know, all the new guys, I felt like, acquitted themselves very well in this year's show. It kind of sucks for me. I've never had that perspective of just being able to listen and hang out and not be last second trying to go through stuff and figure stuff out, which mine's always, you know, up to the last second, basically. Never been able to just crack a few beers and whatnot and just enjoy the whole show all the way through, because I've been basically participating since before I was kind of even a listener. I never heard a single smack off until, you know, I was in one.
Right.
So I listened to the old ones, but it's different from hearing them live, you know.
And, right. You called in and Rome loved you right off the bat.
Seeing it develop and seeing, you know, this plot twist and this dude doing this and this guy doing this and what all's happening going down live action. I'm usually too deep into it to be able to enjoy and appreciate the other calls while I'm going through my stuff, trying to figure stuff out last second.
It's been a hell of an arc in the roster from my listening perspective to now being in it. Like when I was initially listening, guys like it's like Joe and Hollywood were in it, you know, and like Joe and the OC and guys like I don't know. It was just a totally different field and like kind of a different delivery on talent, and it was really more just based on like sports takes and crushing each other.
Well, and I like that aspect of it. You know, there's a lot of things, the way things have developed. I'm a traditionalist. I feel like it shouldn't be a huge team of people. I don't know, maybe other people have had huge teams in the past that I don't know about. Maybe I'm the only one, you know, rolling around doing this myself, but it seems like, you know, and a little bit of help here and there, you know, that's one thing. But when you're crowdsourcing a call, you know, you got a text chain of 50 people, and these guys are all talking about it so openly, that's like insulting to me, you know, when I hear about this guy, like, oh, we got this take, you know, I'm just like, dude, how many clowns, you know, and word gets back to me from a lot of those people, and,
sure,
you know, who slips seen ships.
And, yeah, I was kind of up to speed on some things too, and it was like, I don't know. It was I like the aspect of just being a caller to a radio show. You know what I mean? But at the same time, the amount of work he put into it and like tapping into that sentiment, we all knew we were in for an uphill battle at that point. Like it was likely going to be the ball game. You know, but
yeah, no, I think you get your phone and you got you. Even a tag team, I mean, that's not unprecedented. When me and Chell teamed up.
Sure, yeah. The Tolas have done that in the past, you know.
In the past, you know, no one had pulled it off like we had.
No.
But still, you've got one dude, two dudes, and they're on the phone, and that's the team, and you know who's getting credit. You know, it's not 50 ghost writers, you know,
right,
in a text chain.
Right.
You know, brainstorming throughout the whole year. You know, so so that's not my thing. And then the in studio part, I think I said this before. I think, you know, some guy flipping burgers on the East Coast, you know, without the money to travel across the country and show up to Jim's studio, you know, assuming Jim would grant him, you know, permission to come into the studio or whoever granted permission.
Right.
You know, if that guy doesn't have the same opportunity as somebody on the West Coast, then I don't think it's fair. You know, I think that guy flipping burgers on the East Coast, you know, working his ass off, trying to get his stuff together, trying to make a splash, shouldn't be at a disadvantage just because he doesn't live on the West Coast and doesn't have the money to fly across the West Coast and doesn't have the clout with Jim to be able to parlay his way into the studio. Because I know there's something, I mean, shoot, you think they were going to let Vic come in the studio? Lunatic like Vic come up in there? In the Jim's house? Uh-uh.
Or like Brad and Corona rolls up in his old VW bus.
There's other people. You think he was going to let Cal in Vegas come up in that studio? Uh-uh.
Oh, man, you
no
don't
way.
Want
to.
You got to keep that guy well away. I don't think that guy's allowed to leave Nevada.
Yeah, Jim's probably got a restraining order against Cal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, so again, you know, but from a fairness standpoint, is that fair to Cal or whoever else that he can't go into the studio, you know, due to restraining order or otherwise,
right,
or parole violation or otherwise, is that fair to him? You know, I think you got a phone, you got your content, and go at it, let's bang, you know, but, you know, that wasn't the case this year, and it wasn't the case the year before that, so, you know, it's a little bit demoralizing. More than anything, you know, I want to protect the sanctity of the competition, and not ruin it for everybody. And I think there's a risk of doing that when the inequities are so extreme. And I think they were last year, so.
That said, 2018 coming back hot, right?
Man, I never planned too much in advance. But I'm sure 2018 will be a battle if Jim decides to have it again. But I haven't really put much thought into it at this point, so.
Long way to go. We still got to watch the calendar turn.
Yeah. That's true.
Right on, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on. Plug your email one more time for anybody.
Oh, yeah, man. People hit me up. They're at TheMikeAndIndy on Twitter. Feel free to email me as well. I'm always all ears. It's always confidential if you email me. You got a question for me, just want to chat, whatever, you know, hit me up, hit me up on Twitter, feel free, obviously, everybody, and I appreciate you having me on.
All right, man.
And if, you know I got the stuff, you know where it's at, you know what time it is.
Oh, you know.
No, I got you.
I appreciate it again, Mikey, and if anybody wants to respond to us, anything we've said on here, whether you're pissed off, whether you liked it, whether you hated it, just let us know. It's thebelligerentcanadian@gmail.com or @belligerentnuck on Twitter, and of course hit up Mikey too. And thanks again, Mike. Man, we'll be in touch soon.
No problem, man. Have fun.
Appreciate it, brother. Later. Baby, bitches know they love to hate me. I come.
like this, my swagger never left.